Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 4th day of August, 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Dan will join us too for Commodity Week today, recorded at 3 o'clock, posted to the website by 5, and that you can hear tomorrow during this hour of our program. He'll be joined by Joe Vaklevic of Standard Grain and Sherman Newland of Risk Management Commodities. During the show today, stay with us because Matt Bennett will be here, too, to take a look at the cash grain market. He's with Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds. And we'll talk with Mike Tenura of T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois, right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here the way the figures finished up in Chicago on this Thursday afternoon, down 4 1/4 in the corn pit at $3.20 3/4. Nearby, 4 cents lower at $3.31. The March contract down 3.5 cents. May contract at $3.48 1/4, down 3.5, and July down 3 cents. September at $3.62, down 2 3/4. Soy complex, August beans at $9.90 1/2, unchanged. September unchanged at $9.73 1/2. November at $9.56 3/4, up 1 1/4. January futures at $9.57 1/2 higher, and the March at $9.50 1/4, up 2.5 cents. The May at $9.49 1/2, up 2 1/4. Soy complex, bean oil at $30.54, up 24 cents. Bean meal at $3.29.70, down 80. Wheat futures at $4.03.20, down 70, or rather down 7 cents. In December, down 5 3/4 at $4.30 1/2. Next year's July at $4.77 1/2, a nickel lower. Hard red in the winter wheat. July contract at $4.69 1/4, down 6 1/4. Live cattle futures in Chicago. August contract 55 cents lower at $116.20. Feeders at $147.37 1/2, a dime lower, and lean hogs for the day at $67.70, down 65 cents on the afternoon. Of course, you're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find us online at willag.org. We'll post our Commodity Week program there at about 5 o'clock this afternoon, maybe earlier if I can get to it. Dan Zwicker, of course, will be one of our guests, along with Joe Vaklevic and Sherman Newland. This is Illinois Public Media.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.
Here's what some of the energy segments look like at this hour. September crude oil at $41.82. That's up 99 cents a barrel. Ethanol futures 2 7/10 cents higher at $1.40 2/10. Gasoline 1 1/2 cents higher at $1.36 1/2. On the Arababan, heating oil or diesel fuel at $1.32 1/10. That's 3 4/10 cents higher. Natural gas is just about 0.5 cents lower at $2.83 4/10 cents. The Dow Jones Industrial Average down 2 points at 18,267. The U.S. dollar up 0.205, 95.725, and the gold futures are $3.90 higher at $1,360. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area today. Skies will be sunny, a few clouds out there, a high of 90 degrees, winds will be light and variable tonight, clear skies, then some increasing clouds, scattered showers late, a 40% chance we may get 0.3 inches in the area, low of 71 degrees, on a south wind at 5 to 10, and then tomorrow variable cloudiness, a 60% chance of rainfall in the area, about 0.3 maybe, 86 degrees for the high. Friday night, partly cloudy and a low of 64. Saturday, intervals of clouds and sunshine, and a high of 81 degrees. On Saturday evening, a few clouds will drop to 63. Sunday, sunshine and 81. Monday, partly cloudy and 84. Tuesday, generally sunny, despite a few afternoon clouds, and a high of 88 degrees. And Wednesday of next week, a 30% chance of rainfall, morning sunshine, and a high of 90 degrees. More on the weather forecast coming up here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, lending support to generations of farm families for 100 years. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit Illinois offers financial products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
It is the fourth day of August. We're now joined by Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Hi, Todd.
All right, let's go through the marketplace and get kind of a broad assessment from you of where we stand today with very low prices for corn and considerably lower prices for soybeans than we've had from earlier in the year.
Well, I think the crop's big from at least where I'm sitting at in the Corn Belt, and I guess I would not or I can't argue with the FC Stone crop estimates. And if they are on target, now the bean number probably still has a few more weeks to grow or decline, but if we have generally favorable weather, that bean number is going to grow also. So I think we've got ourselves in a big overproduction situation, probably more so in corn than in soybeans because of the big acreage increase that we saw in corn. And in that environment, with no loan reserve or grain reserve or loan prices, and with the type of carryover that could be facing, my guess is that we've got some more downward pressure in prices. Now, the big question is you know, I think most are expecting that USDA will probably come in underneath the FC Stone number simply because they're a little more conservative. And then as time goes on, if the FC Stone number is right, then you know, the old saying, big crops get bigger. So then we would keep seeing bigger estimates as we go on into the fall. Soybeans, like I said, is still questionable, you know, but it looks big from where I'm at here in the Corn Belt. And your crop rating levels on both corn and soybeans do say that we are headed toward record type yield. So seasonally, though, if you want to sit back and kind of look at the big seasonal picture, it's not uncommon for the markets to make some kind of low prior to or shortly after the August crop report. And then we have a tendency to have some kind of late August bounce as we go into a Labor Day. Now, that's questionable with this type of crop. That we're looking at, we would have to have some adverse weather scares or something new would have to come into the marketplace that the market is not aware of at this point to probably have anything meaningful of an August rally. But then, you know, the seasonals turn down then on September 1st, right on into about first part of October, very, very strong seasonal tendency to decline during that month. Just as you have a very, very strong seasonal to decline during the month of July. So the market is working a fairly seasonal pattern. We basically posted our tops of the market during that mid to late June timeframe when we normally make season highs. So on an average basis, the market is working a seasonal pattern. And if that is to continue, we would maybe see a period of consolidation here during the month of August once we get past this crop report. And then once harvest begins to get going and spreads out across the Corn Belt, then we would see downward pressure as you go on into a typical time frame to have a harvest low during the first couple weeks of October. And then we'll see where we go on any kind of post-harvest recovery rally. But it's all about crop size. Maybe FC Stone's too rich. But I wouldn't be surprised if the crop is that big. I'm sure not going to argue with that number. Now, we're going to see what FOMA Economics comes up with, I think tomorrow at 10 or 10:30 or something like that. And they normally try to, I think on a crop report, try to give us what USDA is going to give us next week. And then we'll see, what they think USDA, what kind of number they come up with, or if they come up with a number close to FC Stone. So that's going to be real interesting to see where they come at. And then I think then the market then will just be kind of basically get braced for USDA's number next week sometime.
Informa's numbers usually are, as you said, an expectation of what they believe USDA will actually say, and they also give a number that they believe is the case. The FC Stone number, for those who don't know what it is at this point, is 15.146 billion bushels. It's a big crop at 175 bushels to the acre for corn. The bean number is really impressive as well, a 4.054 billion bushel crop at 48.8 billion bushels to the acre. Next Friday, not this one, but the following Friday is the 12th, and that's the day USDA will release those crop production figures. It's kind of the line in the sand that you have put forth for maybe a bottom in the marketplace, if there's one to come at that point. How much of a rally after that, and would it be a space that you believe some new and old crop sales could be made on?
Well, that's a good question. The crop is so big. I have a sneaky feeling what farmers are going to do. Farmers are not likely to have enough storage to store this crop, especially with the carryover that we have the current year here. So you're probably going to see farmers get very active using basis contracts, delayed pricing contracts. So corn is going to move into the pipeline, and as corn moves into the pipeline, then there's really no need for the end user to really have to bid aggressively for it. It just comes to town. They're able to use it. The best thing to do is probably we're going to have to find a point of equilibrium where the market begins to start leveling out. And on corn, the technicians are basically looking at that 318 and a quarter low, and then you got to probably look at the next level of support is going to be somewhere around, probably every dime lower, $3.10, $3, $2.90. If we happen to go down to those levels, that will probably encourage all the more basis contracting and deep delay pricing contracting. But it all depends upon whether or not FC Stone is on the money with their number, or if the number's closer to 172 or something like that rather than 175. It does make a little difference, but I think at this point the crop is what it is. Whether it goes up a bushel, down a bushel, I don't think makes a lot of difference at this point. We just have too much of it for any kind of significant price rally. The only thing we got, probably the last straw on the weather front, would probably be an early frost to clip the crops north of Interstate 80, or at least in the far northwestern Corn Belt. That could maybe clip the overall yield potentials. The other one would be, maybe we get ourselves into an extremely wet harvest where nobody can harvest. We begin to get a lot of harvest losses. But I don't think either one of those are farmers who want to root for those. I don't think they want to root for those. So, but it's going to have to take an extreme weather pattern, I think, to shake this thing, to give us any kind of meaningful rally, given the crop size that we're basically looking at, Todd.
Hey, thanks so much, Dan. Dan Zwicker, of course, is with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas, joins us on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. In today's agricultural news, a recent poll suggests consumers are unlikely to use QR codes on food labels. The use of scannable codes to let shoppers know if a product contains GMO ingredients may be the food industry's preference for labeling, but it doesn't seem to be the top pick for consumers. Less than half of consumers said they were likely to scan a QR code on food packaging to find out if a product contains a GMO ingredient. That, according to a new survey from the Annenberg Public Policy Center of the University of Pennsylvania and the Department of Human Ecology at Rutgers. In the poll, which questioned 1,011 U.S. adults in late July, 40% said they were somewhat or very likely to scan a QR code, while 21% said they were unlikely to do so, and 38% said they simply wouldn't. On that note, Vermont this week announced the state has stopped enforcement of its GMO labeling law. That following President Barack Obama's signing of the National GMO Labeling Bill that preempts state laws. Let's turn our attention now to other places in Washington, D.C. The Renewable Fuels Association says U.S. regulators and environmental officials should probe for possible manipulation in the market for U.S. biofuels credits. The comments come after prices for biofuel credits surged for unknown reasons, that according to the RFA. In a letter this week, the association encouraged the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, or CFTC, and the Environmental Protection Agency, EPA, to determine whether certain parties may be exerting undue influence on prices or otherwise engaging in manipulative practices. RFA says the association is concerned about recent irregular activity and volatility. From D.C., we go to the international front, where Russia is exploring ways to export more poultry and beef products to Japan. Meeting Place reports that officials from Russia and Japan met last week and plans are underway to inspect Russian plants to enable them to export to Japan. In talks last week, the two nations also discussed the prospects of bilateral cooperation in agriculture. Russia says the talks centered on exports of grain and related products from Russia to Japan. A list of Russian establishments interested in export of meat and poultry products to Japan is being prepared now by government officials, and those facilities are ready to host an inspection mission from Japan. And finally today, this from Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack. He thinks the agricultural industry needs to do a better job of speaking with one unified voice. Vilsack recently said too much attention is paid to what divides the industry, whether you grow organic, conventional, or whether GMOs are bad or not. But he says farming is a profession that benefits the entire nation, even for those who don't realize it.
Every one of us that's not a farmer is not a farmer because we have farmers. We've delegated the responsibility of feeding our families to a relatively small percentage of this country. If you look at 85% of what's grown in this country, it's raised by 200,000 to 300,000 people. That's less than 0.1% of America. But the other 99% of us can be lawyers and doctors and Peace Corps volunteers and economists and people that work for government.
Vilsack says Americans enjoy freedoms and securities that come along with a robust agricultural industry.
It is not true in most of the countries in this world. And then when we go to the grocery store, we walk out of it with more money in our pocket as a percentage of our paychecks than anybody else in the world. So we have this incredible economy that's consumer-oriented that allows us to buy stuff. It's unbelievable.
The U.S. Secretary of Agriculture believes non-agricultural community members should take some time to thank American farmers for these unique freedoms and opportunities. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on a Thursday afternoon. Mike Tenura joins us as usual. He's at T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Mike, a couple of things to talk about in the month of August. We've had across the Corn Belt pretty decent amounts of rain. I suspect moisture content is good enough to make it through this month for the most part for both the corn and the soybean crops. However, August is the month for soybeans, and temperatures do make a difference. Let's start there. What do you think about temperatures and fluctuations as we move through the rest of this month?
Well, we don't think temperatures are going to be exactly ideal or exactly problematic. You could kind of look at it both ways. On the one hand, we'll have occasional heat. We're seeing that today, and we're going to see that at times next week. But between these periods of heat, it will be cool. Take a look at what happens tomorrow and then last through Sunday. High temperatures will only be in the 70s and 80s with lows in the 50s and 60s across the Corn Belt. That's generally considered very good conditions for corn and soybean development. But again, once we get into next week, things aren't quite as good. High temperatures around 90, low temperatures around 70. So you put all of this together, we'll essentially be seeing fluctuating temperatures with any given day fairly close to normal or a little bit above it. And we expect that to last through 10 days and more than likely through 2 weeks.
And if you look further out, do you see any real change in that pattern?
Not at this point. You always have to keep an eye on the weather every day. We've seen that many times in history where if you expect one pattern to last too long, you can often be surprised. So we always have to look at the weather. But just from what we can see today and what we've been seeing over the last couple of weeks, we just aren't super concerned at this point for any sustained period of heat to develop. But at the same time, we don't think there will be a sustained period of coolness either. So again, we're kind of in that middle range, not ideally cool, but also not problematically hot.
Can you look back and maybe summarize how you view the growing season for different parts of the United States? And I suppose if you want to divide it up into segments, that's fine. But really, what has happened to this point?
Well, the easiest way to look at it would just kind of be to take it month by month. If you look at what happened during the corn and soybean planting season back in April and May, there weren't too many problems. Most areas were planted on time. And from that point forward, things were looking okay, at least initially. But then we got later into June, and what happened was is that it stayed dry and it stayed hot for a fairly long period of time. If you look at the Corn Belt, temperatures were the 18th warmest of the last 121 years. And if you look at rainfall, it was around the 11th driest. So pretty warm and dry in June. That had a lot of people concerned leading into July because we know that generally, the most important period for corn and soybean development begins around July 1st and then continues through August and eventually ends in September. Once we got into July, things started to change, and we even saw some of these changes in the beginning of June. But essentially what happened is we saw big rains everywhere. Widespread coverage of heavy rain dominated the month of July. Unofficially, it's been the number 5 wettest of the last 121 years in the Corn Belt, and that essentially wiped out what could have been a serious problem for a lot of corn and soybeans. Now here we are in August, and we're looking at weather that isn't exactly great, but isn't exactly problematic. We've seen widespread rain leading up to this period. There are a few dry pockets out there, namely in parts of Indiana and Ohio, but in general, things just aren't looking all that bad at the moment. We do emphasize, though, weather going forward does matter. So even though we know what has happened to this date, we don't know exactly what's going to happen over the next few weeks. If it were to stay wet and turn cool, that would be a great situation for both corn and soybeans. If it were to turn hot and dry, that would be a bit of a problem because, you still need more rain, even though, as you noted, soil moisture is fairly good at the moment. But at least what we see right now, we think it's going to end up being fairly stormy going forward and a little bit to the warm side, but not too hot, not too cool, not too dry, and not too wet. So everything's kind of right in the middle. Maybe not the easiest answer, but that's kind of the way it looks today.
Thank you so much. That, of course, is Mike Tenor.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
It's National Chocolate Chip Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1608, John Tradescant was born. He succeeded his father as naturalist and gardener to Charles I. In 1693, Dom Perignon discovered the process for making champagne. In 1755, Nicolas Jacques Conti was born. He invented the modern graphite pencil. He was also commissioned by Napoleon as chief of the Balloon Corps in Egypt, where among his responsibilities, he invented ways to improvise tools and machines necessary to provide bread and cloth. In 1795, Governor Emerson was born. Best known as an American statistician, in retirement he studied peach culture, the use of phosphate and guano fertilizers. In 1863, Alexander McCady was born, an American meteorologist. He was a pioneer in employing kites in the exploration of high-altitude air conditions. He also invented devices to protect fruit from frost. And in 1958, the first potato flake manufacturing plant opened in Grand Forks, North Dakota. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers, helping farm families succeed for 100 years.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on the 4th day of August. Matt Bennett from Channel Seeds, Bennett Consulting out of Windsor, Illinois, and Shelby County now joins us to take a look at the marketplace. Thanks so much, Matt, for being with us. Glad that you're here on this Thursday. Can you tell me about conditions on the ground there in your area?
You know, I think for the most part our crop looks about as good as what it could look. We've gotten all the rain that we would ever want. We were trending drier there going into the 1st of July, and I think we had about 10 inches of rain in July. So, you know, obviously we really don't need a whole lot of moisture this time. It wouldn't hurt things to maybe get a finishing rain, you know, here in August on the soybean crop. But for the most part, the corn crop's in really good shape, getting pretty close to denting on a lot of this corn. And I would say we're going to have a really good idea of exactly what we've got going out in the field right now. And it looks pretty good.
How worried are you that corn prices, futures in particular, could go much lower than they are now?
You know, I think that the USDA is probably locked into a fairly big yield to start out with. I don't think they'll get terribly carried away, but with 76% good to excellent, it's not too hard to figure out that they're going to be, above the 168. So I would say in that situation, if they go over 170, it's going to put some pressure on the market, especially in the short run. But I think in the long run, demand is awfully good, and we're going to be one of the biggest players in the export market this year. And, you know, I think we'll be able to gobble up more bushels maybe than what the market's giving it credit for.
Do you believe that this might be a year in which U.S. farmers can take back some of that which they gave away, and maybe a few acres around the planet will go away?
I think it's very possible, and I think that one way maybe they can get back a little bit of what they've lost is make the most of their storage, look for the opportunities, with carrying the market and basis appreciation, because I'm sure basis is going to be pretty wide during middle harvest, but I do think that it'll come back, especially with the demand implications.
We heard from Dan Zwicker, he thought there might be a point at which farmers would begin to use some basis contracts here pretty shortly. Do you think that's a good idea?
Yeah, I think the basis at this point is awfully good. And so it's a function of guys have been pretty tight-fisted, not only with cash, but with fall corn as well. And I think doing a basis contract at this point probably makes pretty good sense. If a guy needs money right in the middle of harvest, I certainly wouldn't wait until the middle of harvest to get down corn. I would be maybe a little more proactive at this point, and then I may want to do some re-ownership whenever the sale is made at harvest time, because I think there could be an opportunity, something on a limited risk basis, though.
Matt, thanks so much for taking the time with me.
Hey, thanks, Todd.
Matt Bennett is with Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds. He's out of Windsor, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Medium on this Thursday afternoon. In just about half an hour, the folks that are going to join me for Commodity Week will be on the line. They'll include Dan Zwicker, who we just heard earlier in the program, along with Joe Vaklavec of Standard Grain and Sherman Newland, who's with Risk Management Commodities. Commodity Week is our weekly look at what's happening in the world of agricultural markets. We'll post that to our website by about 5 o'clock tonight, air it on the radio stations tomorrow, but you can always pick it up at willag.org. You have a good afternoon. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.